We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
One month from the start of the NCAA tournaments, Kyle Schassberger and Michael Serber back with you on College Sports Now. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Schass. He's at L_Serberino. Will this weekend deliver the way last weekend had? I think it's week 12 now. I lost track at one point, but weekend 12 here is upon us. Clemson swept Louisville a week ago. Can they keep the train rolling? That's seven straight wins for the Tigers now. Two straight sweeps over Wake Forest and Louisville, of all teams, a week ago. Vanderbilt losing 2-3 to Florida and the midweek to Louisville. Getting set to get back to SEC action this weekend. Texas Tech had stolen 2-3 at Texas. Rutgers whitewashes Big Ten leading Nebraska. Oregon stubs its toe against Wazoo. Lineup card for your viewing prowess this weekend. Coming up with our top series from each power league and more. A loaded slate, including out of the American Athletic Conference. We thought we might be live podcasting here on a Friday afternoon during the first pitch of a doubleheader, or the first game, if you will, in Greenville, North Carolina, ECU and Tulane. First place on the line this weekend in the AAC. Tulane comes in with a first place record at 13-2 overall in the league. But Serbs, they got delayed by rain, of all things. So we don't really need to give any live updates. We'll be off the air before then. But make sure you listen, because as our guest will indicate coming up, Serbs, Aaron Fitt from D1 Baseball, it's a hot spot for him. He'll likely be there this weekend.
That's awesome, man. It is. May has arrived, and with it has the hectic nature of scheduling baseball. During this month, it's not like we have our busiest month on tap, you know, with conference tournaments or anything like that. But May showers always bring a lot of headaches when it comes to the scheduling front.
So that game, that series, that doubleheader is delayed by 90 minutes, 1:32 Eastern time. So as this hits your podcast feed, that one's going to be getting underway. Aaron Fitt of D1 Baseball, not to bury the lead, will join us. We'll talk about all of these regional situations, conference races heating up in the final month of the year. Some good stuff with Aaron Fitt. That's coming up a little bit later in the podcast. And Serbs, full disclosure for our audience, I recorded that, just Fitzy and I, yesterday on Thursday. I may or may not have been wearing pants.
Well, you're wearing pants now. This is the first pod we've done in the same room together in like a year and some change. Like, this is the first time I've done a podcast recording with other people to look at. I'm a little uncomfortable because I feel like you keep looking at me. I feel like you keep like, it's like, what is he looking at? Because for the past 14 months, yeah, pants were an option for this podcast gig.
Optional. And really, most of the time, they never existed. Like, what are pants? And yes, yesterday, pants did not exist for me. So who am I kidding? Why am I saying they were
optional? My legs are extremely uncomfortable. They feel restricted. They're like, what have you done to us? We were free.
I did. Aaron Fitt coming up, the interview recorded on Thursday, that was recorded from my house. And yes, Serber and I have always been in opposite opposite locations here during our college baseball podcast recording sessions. It's good to have you next to me here in the house, or at least a table away. It's a little more intimate. It's great. We might go have a few beers here in a little bit, too, to celebrate some office successes, some full-time hires around here. So things may be normalizing a little bit here on a Friday afternoon. And hey, I just stepped off the 18th green as well. So 20 host sites the week of May 10th now. That's the news in the last week. We're going to have 20 sites here in the next few days that are going to be announced by the NCAA. That's going to get squeezed down the night before Memorial Day, which is Selection Monday. So Aaron Fitt will go over a lot of those different scenarios for the power leagues and some of the smaller conferences. 46 sites had submitted bids, according to Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball, his colleague Aaron Fitt on the program today. Hot and heavy races, hosting slots, league finishes, auto bids, at-large cases, etc. Things are percolating. Serbs, I know you were percolating earlier this week. You had a staycation, correct?
Yeah. I put up like the out of office on the email and told everyone to leave me alone.
Did that happen?
A little bit. It's a little bit. You know how it is, especially like in COVID times. Like the barriers are gone. People are just like, they're working all hours of the day. They're working on weekends. They're like fitting it in when they can, because I'm not someone who has kids, but you have a daughter. Like a lot of our coworkers have kids. Like sometimes you just like, when you cannot send your kid to childcare anymore because of COVID, you just kind of have to fit work in when you can. And kind of by default, you know, all of us are kind of just like working on our own schedule, which has been good and bad, right? Like people are very understanding when you take 3 or 4 hours to respond to an email. But at the same time, people are like, well, there's no such thing as vacation anymore. My vacation is like 2 hours in the afternoon when my kid like watches a movie or goes to sleep or something like that. So like, you know, even claiming I'm taking a staycation is really just a claim of being like, I'm not going to pay attention to your email.
It's very weird to think about it, because you're absolutely right. Like, vacation isn't even a pressing thing for me to try and carve out and find. Now, I've got a couple. Like, I already went to Houston a few weeks ago. I'm going to Chicago to play golf up at a resort in Indiana, in Northwest Indiana, north of South Bend, what have you. I try to do that as many times as I can each year with 16 guys, and we play about 100 holes of golf, and we don't remember probably 95% of those holes of golf, right? But like, I have that coming up in a month, so that'll be interesting. That's just as the NCAA tournament is getting started. I'll be in Tuscaloosa next week on assignment for work with the SEC softball tournament. So, you know, I'm getting around, I'm getting out, I'm doing things. But yeah, when you're at home, the week-to-week grind, the day-to-day grind is just so different. Because you're not glued to your chair, you're not glued to your laptop. I find myself working, you know, from 10 p.m. to midnight to 1 a.m. a lot of nights, just because I'm a night owl, number one. So, like, really, COVID has lined up beautifully with my own schedule.
Yeah, no, I like, productivity-wise, I haven't dropped off at all. And I've been able to, like, be more productive in some situations just because, yeah, like, I too, I'm a night owl. Like, I get a lot accomplished between the hours of, like, 8 p.m. and midnight, creatively, you know, just thinking about things and like, you know, conceptualizing ideas for podcasts, things like that. It's just when I'm good at it, I'm just not sharp in the morning. Like, I'm not a morning person. And so like the work from home, like work from anywhere deal. Yeah. It's been a good thing, I think, for a lot of people. And my hope is, as we all make our way back into the office and we like rejoin this fraternity like environment that we have of like being each other's friends and brothers and so on and so forth in the office, like, I'm looking forward to seeing like how everyone has kind of embraced this new way that they've learned how to be productive and how it all meshes together. I'm as much as I love working from home and I love the like make my own schedule aspect of it, I do really miss like all of us being together in the office, talking sports, we working day to day. Like, one of the reasons I'm productive is because I don't get to go bullshit with like my friend down the hall,
right,
for like 30 to 45 minutes every day. So like, there's that. But I think like it's going to be invigorating when we're all back together. Like, it's invigorating to be here now recording this podcast with you.
To see you handsome bearded man. You, what is that? The Duke's Mayo championship game trophy t-shirt? That's a home field item,
home
right?
Home field apparel. They do not sponsor this podcast. They don't. But you can go to home field and see some cool shirts. Yeah, I've got the Duke's Mayo Bowl shirt on now.
When they broke the trophy.
They broke the trophy and just put a little squirt.
I can't even remember who broke it and who won it. Was that Wisconsin?
Oh,
It doesn't matter. It just matters that the trophy shattered.
I can only just see in my head the face of the player who dropped it, and like it just shatters everywhere. He just looks up. I don't know. There was a lot of cameras in the room, but he found the one. He like finds one that made its way onto Twitter, and he just looks directly into it, and he just says, it's like, I can't believe I just did that. I'm in so much trouble. Before everyone realizes, it's like, oh, wait, this is the Duke's Mayo Bowl. No one's in trouble. This is fine. We have mayonnaise right here. This is actually a better trophy.
I think it was Graham Mertz.
Was it the QB?
Yeah, the QB for Wisconsin. Yep. It was Wisconsin that shattered the trophy after beating Wake Forest. It was a 42-28 ball game. So, gotta love it, man. College football, as we start to gear up as a company, Learfield IMG College will represent multimedia rights for, 95% of all D1 and even, you know, more institutions around the country. I mean, we are a Swiss Army knife when it comes to content and audio and all of that. And we're starting to look ahead to football season. And are we going to have filled stadiums? I think more often than not, we probably will.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of people in the stadiums. I think especially, you know, take a look at college baseball, right? And the way the SEC has handled, certain teams have handled letting people back in, like that's going to translate directly to football. We're not going to go backwards. My assumption and my hope is that we do not go backwards from now until beginning of college football season, which I haven't done the math, but we're pretty close. Like it's around 100 days until we have college football injected directly into our veins again.
June, July, August, 90 days.
And then, like, you know, when is week zero? I know, like, we kick off first week of September.
If I were to guess, I think
like week one.
If I were to guess, I think we're probably at like 110
days.
107, 8, 9, 10, right in there. Man, it's close.
How far are we from the NCAA tournament in baseball? We're 30 days away.
Yeah, June 4th, a month away.
Let's go, baby.
Let's do it. Speaking of fans in the stadiums, it's a great segue here to get off out of the box for the lead here of the show, and we've got some audio to play to accompany this. I want to know why there aren't more Dan McDonald's in the world. The Louisville head coach earlier this week after the midweek win over Vanderbilt, which was emotionally charged because it's Vanderbilt, and you're going up against Tim Corbin. I mean, those two teams and the quality of games that we get based not just off of, you know, how close they are geographically, Louisville, Kentucky, and Nashville, Tennessee, but, you know, the ACC, the SEC, they have given us tremendous midweek battles. 7-2 is the final score at Jim Patterson Stadium. Louisville wins at home. Dan McDonald then, in his post-game presser, Zoom, if you will, you got the field in his as the backdrop, just to kind of paint a picture for you, begins to go off and rant against the lack of fans that have been in the stadium, obviously for COVID-related reasons, COVID protocols, COVID restrictions. And he says that he can't get jacked up about the possibility of hosting a regional because he hasn't had a regional environment in relation to the fans all year long. All the more frustrating based on other major sporting events that are going on not too far away. Now, it's a bit curious because you just got swept by Clemson, Serbs Clemson Tigers sweepy over the weekend, but then you come back, get the win over Vanderbilt. You're not even a lock yet to host a regional, but here's Dan McDonald after the win over Vanderbilt earlier this week.
I'm ready to open this place up. I'm not going to lie. I'm beyond frustrated. I'm tired of it. We're an outdoor sport. I mean, let's go, people. Turn on the Masters. Watch the Derby. Watch the games in the SEC and in other ballparks. It's an outdoor sport. You want to risk it, you risk it. Like, I'm tired of playing games without people in the stands. So let's open it up and let's let our fans come and let's let them enjoy some Louisville baseball. And then I'll be a little more excited to host a regional because, unfortunately, I haven't had a regional atmosphere yet. Right? Do we not agree?
I agree. Putting AD Vince Tyra and the Athletics Administration on notice after the Vandy game. But again, Serbs, like, you're a team that's on the bubble at this point when it comes to hosting a regional anyways, but you can hear the frustration in McDonald's voice. He can't be the only one, as Aaron Fitt of D1 Baseball will allude to coming up in our conversation shortly. We start off on this topic, but Serbs, what'd you make of McDonald's comments earlier this week, which 24 hours later, what happened? Louisville increases capacity. They say around 50% we will allow. So they double it.
What have they been letting in? They've been letting in 25%.
Yeah, about 20-25%.
50% I think is reasonable. I understand his frustration because the Kentucky Derby was this past weekend, right?
Yeah.
And it was packed. And you would not think COVID existed had it not been for, you know, some people wearing masks. Like, so his frustration's got to be like, what the hell? Like, why are, you know, he's probably already has a bit of a complex being a college baseball coach in that, like, I need more from y'all. Because let's be real, resources when it comes to these college baseball programs does not match that of the college football or college basketball programs, you know? So his frustration has got to be like, I am like, I have to fight for everything. You're making me fight for this too when it's in our best interest to let more people in. Like, and he's not even saying let 100% of the people in. He's not saying have the place sold out. He's just saying let some more people, give us an atmosphere. Because he's right, 25%, that's no atmosphere. That's almost more difficult to play in than no one being there.
Well, and I think it's insulting based on what happened in your city just a week prior at Churchill Downs for the Kentucky
that's
Derby.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I mean, he's saying, like, what are we trying to accomplish here?
And you turn on the TV, you see the Kentucky Derby, you see the amount of fans, and I don't know what the number was. I know there were restrictions, but you see how tightly everyone is packed in together without masks, many of them, just like the NFL draft serbs, which, by the way, Justin Fields, oh my God, I blacked out. I blacked out when the pick came across. Like, I couldn't believe it. The Bears move up 9 spots. Talk about other end of the spectrum enthusiasm from where we were over a week ago when we recorded ahead of that draft. I had no interest in who the Bears were selecting. But the NFL draft itself in Cleveland, not too far away from Louisville as well, same part of the country, I thought that was a PSA. Like, serbs, like literally, I was texting guys around the office. I didn't want to spout off on Twitter and say the wrong thing. Because, again, you got to be worried about what you say. And I'm one of those guys, I think, more than anyone, really has to be worried about what he says on social media. But I'm watching the draft coverage, and you can tell they all got their talking points. Oh, these are vaccinated people. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got their masks or they don't have their masks. But these are all vaccinated people, and you just hear it. You hear it, and you hear the talent, whether it's Reese Davis, which I was locked into on the ABC coverage for the college football game day spin of it. You hear him try to force feed you a little bit and get it in at inopportune times because you just see image after image after image of all these people without masks all on top of each other celebrating their NFL draft night.
Yeah, and the draft is a little bit different because the point I was going to make about the Kentucky Derby and why I could see McDonald having some frustration here is there is a definite class issue at hand here, right? The people who are going to the Kentucky Derby are being afforded the opportunity to do this in such a way, whereas...
It's the who's who of people who are going to attend.
Tom Brady dressed up as a Roger Rabbit character. You know,
it's bougie as hell.
Yeah. Whereas like Joe and Nancy from down the street in Louisville, like they just trying to go to the baseball game. You know what I mean? And so, and you're telling them no. But meanwhile, they're watching on TV in their city, like all of these rich elite people at the Kentucky Derby doing whatever the hell they want. What this all really is a PSA for is perhaps to get vaccinated, as many of us as possible, so that we can go back to just doing this without all of the bullshit. And there's our E for the episode. And when I say bullshit, I'm not trying to minimize like measures put in place to protect one another. Like, I've been wearing this mask for the past year, over a year, you know, 14 months. Not for myself, but for everyone else. And like at this point, we're getting to the point, and there's class issue here as well, but we're getting to the point where almost everyone has had access to a vaccination in the United States.
And at this point, if you haven't gotten one, I was one of those guys up until a couple of weeks ago. If I wasn't traveling for work next week, I wouldn't have gone to get it. But I felt I didn't want to be the selfish one who didn't have at least one shot in my arm by that point because of who I work for and the environment that I'm going to be going to. So I went ahead and get it. But at this point, if you haven't...
It's on you.
It's on you. And I think you're okay with whatever the consequences might be that are attached to that.
Yeah. Like, we're getting to that point where it's like... And there are... It's state to state, right? We're speaking from a point of reference of North Carolina. And I think North Carolina's done a pretty decent job of rolling this thing out. I mean, we were the first place to get a vaccine shipment, even.
Little birdie in my ear the other day, I think this was yesterday, Thursday morning, at Planet Fitness. Shout out, by the way, they don't pay for an ad either. We'll keep it in. Maybe we should edit out the name of the gym. Asked the dude at the front desk who's already given me hell over my mask several times. By the way, I tweeted out a meme of like Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin just running wild through his house saying, I'm free, yeah. When he realizes he's alone. Like, that's me the day I don't have to wear a mask in the gym. But June 1 is what I'm hearing, hopefully, based on everything in North Carolina, what Roy Cooper has done and what we're targeting, and a lot more things are going to be opening. I'm seeing, I think in Louisville, I'm trying to think what state it was that is lifting like all restrictions here coming up. I mean, we saw Louisiana do it a week ago, and LSU was allowing 100% capacity without masks, you know, for their home games against Arkansas. And in New York, Andrew Cuomo has green-lighted the New York Mets and the New York Yankees to do vaccinated sections at the ballpark, at Citi Field and Yankee Stadium, and non-vaccinated sections. So why don't more teams and facilities follow that lead? Plus, have some frontline workers there offering shots like they're going to be doing at the New York Professional Ball Club's home facilities. And if you get a shot there, if you haven't gotten one yet, come get one. We'll give you a shot. We'll give you a free ticket into the game.
Yeah. I mean, no one should be forced to do something they don't want to do. Plain and simple. If you don't want to get the vaccine, that's your decision. That's your choice. Your reasoning, I could really care less about. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that, it's the same for me with, like, who you vote for. Right. You have every right to vote for who you – your reasoning I could care less about. Please don't ask me who I voted for. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason we go in a private booth to do that. I don't want people being put on blast for not getting vaccinated. But at the same time, over the past year, a lot of measures have been taken by a lot of people to ensure the safety of others. We are getting to the point soon. I don't know if we're there yet, because like I said, I have no frame of reference for what it's like in New Mexico or Colorado or Louisiana or Tennessee. I know what it's like in North Carolina. We're getting to the point where it's going to be like not my problem anymore, dude. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to the football game. Like, my wife and I are going on our first date out
tonight. Night of our recording.
Yeah. Like, and that's a long time coming. Like, sure, I've done things and she has done things over the course of quarantine that are romantic to like have a date like atmosphere. But we haven't been going to restaurants. We haven't been going to bars. Like, but we're doing that now. And one of the reasons we're doing that now is because everybody in her family and my family has been vaccinated. We don't have to worry about, like, getting grandpa sick. You know what I mean? Like, so it's getting to the point, and McDonald has a point here, circling back to his original. It's getting to the point, like, let's let people in.
Sure.
Let's let people in. We have now reached a point where you can make your own risk assessment. A lot of people have been vaccinated. A lot of people are fully vaccinated, meaning that like the incubation period, which it takes to be fully vaccinated, has taken place. Let's start opening things up and letting people in, and let's let people make their own decisions. If things, I don't know, if we're to live in like this fear anymore, because we have been living in fear.
Yes, no doubt,
and rightfully so. A lot of people have died. You know, who would not have been dead this past year. Like, let's be real. A lot of people have died who would not have died. So, but it's time to, it's getting to the point where we need to move past that. And that's what McDonald is saying. He's like, look, if we're going to say the Kentucky Derby can have people all over each other, no masks whatsoever, like, give us a little bit more. Like, he just wants to see a step in the direction. The problem is he hasn't seen that.
Right.
We haven't done anything all, like, and this all goes back to the NCAA having no leadership all season to place any type of mandate over these schools to force the hands of the conferences. It all started with the Pac-12 and Big Ten football debacle. All of this, any situation in which the conference looked bad, could have been avoided had the NCAA stepped up at all. They only want to step up when they want to punish you for something.
Very reactionary.
Oh, 100%. And so McDonald, I think, this is the climax of 15 months of not having anyone provide any leadership. and everyone just saying, well, it's up to y'all, and then it being up to his administration, and then probably him not really having a say. Because the administration is strictly looking at the PR aspect of it, which up until about a month ago was, hell no, we don't need people here. People are dying at a high rate still. We've now gotten to the point where vaccinations have become widely available. You don't have to pay for it. It is free. You can walk up to a site not having pre-registered and get shot in the arm that day.
Right. It's available at an insane, you know, amount of – it's available in an insane amount of places where it's easily accessible. And that's the thing. Like, our healthcare workers, governments, all of those involved – are making it so easy for you to go and get it at this point. I went to the mall in Greensboro before to a baseball game last night. Went to the Greensboro Grasshoppers. And they were it was a vaccine clinic. At the same time, like you walk the same door.
That's where I got vaccinated.
The same door that I walk into to go check out Champs or Foot Locker, which by the way, they didn't have an Old Navy. I'm kind of not surprised.
There's no Old Navy.
There's no Old Navy in that mall.
The Greensboro Mall is better than our mall here in Winston.
I love the – there was more energy. Yeah, it wasn't ghostly.
It looks more mall-like.
It does, like, on the inside.
Yes, sure. There is very – like, it looks like an 80s mall that's been taken very well care of. Sure. Whereas ours looks like one of these dead malls you see on YouTube where these people, like, walk around. And they
used to work at one of those when I was in high school and in college.
Nice.
RIP Lincoln Mall, Madison, Illinois. But it's going to take more out of you as an individual to say no to a vaccine than to get one at this point. It's more of a chore to avoid the vaccine at this point. So there's even establishments I saw in New Jersey. It's funny you bring up you and your wife's behavior over the last, you know, 12, 14 months or so, and you're going on your first date here tonight. You know, for me, I different circumstances in my life. And again, this just speaks to how we look at this completely through completely different lenses. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. Like, there might be a consensus. People might try to politicize it when really it should never have to be that way. But like for me, I haven't missed a weekend in the last 4 or 5 months going out and living my life. Like sure. I haven't. Now, did it catch up to me and bite me one time? Sure, yeah, I had COVID New Year. I did. But like I was fine. But yeah. I'm in shape. I'm athletic. I'm young 30s. Like, I'm not at risk by any means. So, not everybody.
You weren't throwing a dart at the dartboard, like, saying, like, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no,
you had
like
a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I knew
that you would be all right.
Yeah, and even going out and putting myself out there, you know, and going to a bar or going to get dinner and, you know, doing things, trying to live my life as normal as I possibly could, you know, 5-6 months ago. I knew like, hey, there was a potential, I guess this could happen. I'm going to do everything I can in terms of washing my hands and sanitizing and trying to keep a distance. Well, and I got to wear a mask everywhere I go. And if it happens, it happens.
Let's take into account like the other factors, such as like you are displaced from your hometown.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't have family.
Yes. My wife and I exist within our family bubble here, which has grandparents in it.
Yep.
That was our reasoning for not doing it. Like, honestly, this is morbid, but like if all of our grandparents were dead,
right?
You know, if our parents were not around.
Don't like, speak like that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, we probably would have been a little more relaxed in like our willingness to when we were going to go out. Like, I think we would have been locked down anyway. But like, you know, it would have been different. So it's everyone's situation is different.
Right.
Like,
it's a different lens.
There's
it's
a
different
risk assessment for everyone.
Sure.
And what McDonald is getting to here is like, let's stop making decisions for people by letting them in. Let people make their own decisions. Anyone who goes to a sporting event, a live sporting event, and catches COVID, it is not in my opinion, it is not the fault of the venue, the team hosting, the university. It is the fault of that person for making their risk assessment and saying like, well, I'm willing to risk it to go to this baseball game. I'm willing to risk it to go to this bar.
You know what you signed up for.
Yeah, like I'm not going to kill anyone by doing this.
Sure.
Right? Like the people who are there are also taking the same risk as me. And what McDonald is saying here is like, let's let everyone make their own judgment, not just like the people who can afford to go to the Kentucky Derby and experience life as it was. Let's let everyone make their own decision on how they want to do this.
And now they're going to be able to get 50% in Jim Patterson Stadium here over the remainder of the season. If people want to make a choice, go out to the ball game, put themselves in that situation, They can do that. They now have the freedom to do so up to 50%. So McDonald's speaks up, very passionate stance from him following the Vanderbilt game. I mean, what a clip that was that you just heard. Aaron Fitt will react to it from D1 Baseball here in a moment. And he got what he wanted a day later. I wish there were more powerful people in North Carolina representing the fitness facilities here. It would be nice to not have to wear a mask 2 months ago, but whatever. I'm playing by the rules, okay? I'm playing by the rules. The drinking, by the way, there is an establishment in New Jersey now that is saying a shot and a beer. So you come in, get a beer, you get a shot in your arm.
Not bad.
So, I mean, again, incentives. You want to go out, you want to hang out, you want to have a beverage, you want to let loose. There you go. You get a shot by going out to the bar. Dan McDonald, most D1 wins since 2007, just to speak to the power of who he is and speaking up and then ultimately being rewarded the next day with increased capacity at Louisville. 642 wins for Louisville after beating Vanderbilt since 2007. The Commodores right behind them with the most wins in D1 baseball since 07 with 641. Florida State, LSU next closest with 629. Can credit ESPNU with that graphic. Again, why ESPNU? This was a Tuesday night game, Serbs. We could have put this on the main network, the four-letter network, ESPN. So, Aaron Fitt has entered the chat, and this man has been killing the game with his college baseball coverage. You can follow him on Twitter at Aaron Fitt. He's been killing the college baseball game when it comes to covering the sport for D1 baseball. He is Aaron Fitt. You can follow him on Twitter at Aaron Fitt. Of course, D1 baseball at d1baseball.com, on Twitter at D1 baseball. Aaron, it's good to talk to you again, my friend. I know, it was a premature end to the season a year ago after we had you on the program a couple episodes in, but it's good to catch up here when really things are starting to crystallize, percolate, if you will, a month out from the start of the NCAA tournament. Conference races here heating up. How you been, my man? I know you're staying busy.
Yeah, sure am. What a difference a year makes, huh? It's incredible to think, you know, this time last year we were all just sitting around twiddling our thumbs, and now we got actual baseball. I mean, it's been a weird season, but we're getting through this thing, and by God, I think we're going to make it.
And we have college baseball coaches beating the drum to increase capacity at their respective stadiums. Why don't we have more Dan McDonald's of the world? I got to ask, what do you make of the Louisville head coaches' comments earlier this week after a win over Vanderbilt, emotionally charged win? You got swept by Clemson the weekend prior. You get a big time victory over Vanderbilt in the midweek, and then you go off, you kind of rant. I mean, he's careful, but he's also not mincing words at all. And then what do you know, a day later, Louisville does increase capacity to what they say approximately will be 50% the rest of the way. What'd you make of McDonald's comments earlier in the week?
I thought it was great. You know, I like when coaches speak their mind, and he clearly had been holding this in and holding it in. And hey, I mean, I don't blame him. You look around the country, and you know, a lot of other venues are at, it seems like, full capacity. I don't know if they're actually at full capacity, but you know, I was in Starkville for a series, you know, a month ago probably, and boy, place was packed. I mean, they really crammed them in there, man. And I was at Virginia Tech this past weekend for a Sunday night game against UVA, and you got students sitting, you know, right next to each other, jammed in there, without any masks either. I guess they're all vaccinated, or maybe they just already eradicated the COVID. I don't know. But anyway, if you look around the country and you see the way other schools are doing it, and then you look at your own, you know, situation, there's nobody there. I don't blame him for getting frustrated. And it kind of shows you what kind of influence he has that the very next day they made the change.
Do you think, or I guess, why aren't more, and maybe they are, they just might lack the profile of one Dan McDonald, are more coaches maybe quietly behind the scenes that we don't know about, hooting and hollering about their own, you know, stadium situations? Mark Kingston a few weeks ago had said something after we did a heckling podcast about it. It was Missouri and South Carolina, and I know, you know, the fans were getting riled up over there in Columbia with Mizzou, and, you know, it became a thing where Kingston talked about that home field advantage that really they had been lacking, but he was careful. He's like, look, my boss is Ray Tanner. Look, I don't know what to say. I don't want to go too far. Tim Corbin even had said a month ago against Tennessee when they were in Knoxville at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, look, COVID doesn't exist in Tennessee. And then it took a month, but now they got four home games remaining, but they are going to be 100% capacity, or at least allow for it now. So, I mean, there are some situations that we've known about that have been publicized, but do you think behind closed doors, you know, this really has been a talking point that we just aren't as aware of?
Yeah, for sure it has been. And of course, you know, the issue is it's not really up, in a lot of cases, it's not up to the athletic director either. I mean, you might have, you know, Ray Tanner, who's a baseball guy, is your AD, and I'm sure he'd love to have fans in there. But I mean, I think in a lot of cases, you're subject to, you know, the regulators, whoever those might be, the public health people, the CDC, whatever, you know, whatever guidelines your university is following. I think it's more than an athletic decision in a lot of cases.
And the CDC, COVID protocols, you know, really this entire pandemic, obviously it's changed the way we operate in every facet of the game, of life, and the NCAA tournament is no exception. Look what we just saw in college basketball. College baseball is going to look a little bit different because you're going to have some unique hosting spots. Potentially 20 bids now, plus four from what was initially announced, is going to be considered, at least in the coming days. May 10th, we're going to have 20 locations that are going to come out. That'll be whittled down to 16 on Selection Monday, a.k.a. Memorial Day. Aaron, I know you and Mark Etheridge, especially in your Nerdcast for D1 Baseball, you guys spend a lot of time kind of toying with the specific options and the order of hosts. But I'm wondering if you can, you know, kind of handicap it for our audience as best you can. And I know it's a difficult thing to do, but, you know, where I go in looking at these hosting positions, like, yeah, you know, the SEC is looking at five, maybe six. Columbia, South Carolina could be one in jeopardy in a normal year, but maybe because of the bid being submitted ahead of time, a scuffling South Carolina won't be hurt too bad. But the ACC, a couple of teams, maybe Notre Dame's a lock, and the Big 12. I'm looking at TCU, Texas Tech. I don't want to steal your thunder, but there's one specific power conference, Aaron, that might come up empty in my mind. That might be the Big 10.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it just, you know, we don't really know how the committee is going to treat the Big Ten, because this is a league that is playing zero non-conference games. They're not allowed to play any non-conference games. And so the RPI is 100% meaningless when you're trying to evaluate a Big Ten team against some other team, because there's no cross-pollination. And so you're really just looking at their overall records and kind of the head-to-head results within their league. And so I think you need to have some separation between the top Big Ten team and the rest of the league in order to probably feel good about, you know, projecting one of those teams as a host. And right now, the top teams, Indiana, Nebraska, Michigan, and, you know, not too far behind, Iowa, Rutgers, Maryland, they're all kind of bunched together, which is, I think, to be expected. But the result of that might be that none of those teams wind up hosting. So you're right. That's a league that, I mean, most years they don't host either. I mean, you know, it seems like from time to time they do. But in an average year, I feel like we might have a Big Ten host, we might not. This year, I suspect we're just playing, you know, it's going to fall into those. It's just too hard to figure it out. It's just too hard to figure out how to handle the RPI. And it's just, there's no parallel for this. So it'll be fascinating to see how the committee handles it.
How about some of those smaller conferences, like and American Athletic Conference with ECU? Yeah. I mean, we can talk about that as a power league, right? The AAC, although they may only get, you know, ECU and Tulane at this point. So, and the winner of this weekend's big series in Greenville, which I know you'll be at, could go a long way in determining. But again, with those sites being announced in a few days, who knows? But Greenville on the table is a host position. I'm curious too. The Big West, we've got Irvine against Santa Barbara, UC Santa Barbara, UC Irvine for Big West supremacy here this weekend. The Pac-12 could roll out a few teams in Stanford, Arizona, Oregon, although they stubbed their toe against Washington State. What do you think about the AAC and where you'll be this weekend, and then also those teams out west, how the hosting situation might shake out?
Well, you're right, first of all, about the American being probably a two-bid league, and that's really presuming Tulane can hold on. Right now, Tulane's in first place. Their RPI is not very good. It's not in a typical at-large range. I think they're in the 70s. And so, you know, I think they have to win the regular season title in that league. And right now they lead it by a game and a half heading into this huge series in Greenville. And, you know, I feel like the American, it is a mid-major, I mean, in baseball, but it's a high mid-major. It's one of the best ones on a year-to-year basis. This year it's kind of down. I mean, you really just have those two teams, Wichita kind of hanging on the periphery. ECU for a while felt like a lock to host a regional. And then the last two weekends, they're playing these four-game series in the American, which is, you know, that's an added challenge because it's really hard to win three out of four against anybody. I feel like if you're playing four-game series, it just lends itself to splits. And that's what they did the last two weekends. They split their series against UCF and Wichita State. And all of a sudden, you know, they're kind of dipping in the RPI a little bit. They're not in first place in the league. And it feels like, you know, if they can't find a way to win three out of four against Tulane this weekend, they might find themselves shut out of hosting position, especially since you've got other teams in the Carolinas, Charlotte maybe, you know, know, has kind of risen up to be a potential host at a Conference USA, although East Carolina did sweep Charlotte head-to-head in a three-game series in non-conference, so maybe the Pirates still get the edge there. But this is a huge, huge series this weekend coming up. It's probably where I'll be, is in Greenville for that American showdown. And you know, a lot on the line for Tulane as an at-large and ECU as a potential host. And to get to the second part of your question, out west, you know, Irvine and Santa Barbara, same deal. They're a four-game series this weekend. They're both kind of right there at the top of the standings. Right now, I mean, Santa Barbara, RPI-wise, not where you typically would look for an at-large team, but they've got a good record, and if they can find a way to win three out of four this weekend, then I think they're golden. If Irvine can find a way to win three out of four on the road, they're probably right in that mix to be one of the top 20, you know, hosting candidates. So huge series on each coast in those kind of power mid-major leagues this weekend.
I do want to finish with a couple of questions on the SEC, right? It just means more. But before we pivot, I want to circle to the ACC, because I know you set up shop out of North Carolina. These East Coast-based teams, and the ACC in particular, is a league that you're plenty familiar with. And we do have a big one in South Bend and Florida State visiting Notre Dame. I mean, what the Fighting Irish have been able to do to this point, it's nothing short of remarkable. And FSU, no slouch either. And one player in particular, Matthew Nelson, who was snubbed off that Golden Spikes Award watch list earlier this season, comes in this week leading the country in home runs with 20. He's got 57 RBIs, too. That's tops nationally. How do you handicap? How do you foresee things going down in South Bend this weekend? Because, you know, I kind of second it to Arkansas and the SEC, who hasn't lost a weekend series all year. Notre Dame is in a similar position. They've yet to lose an ACC series all year. Maybe getting picked off once here before we reach the postseason can do a lot of good, perhaps, in helping the overall development of the team. How do you see it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think maybe there's something to be said for that if you're, like, undefeated and it just kind of takes that pressure off you of trying to put together a perfect season. But I don't think there's any particular, you know, burden that comes with having not lost a weekend. You know, it's just kind of a testament to their consistency. So I will say that I liked what you said about the Arkansas comparison, because I think there's a lot to that, not just the fact that neither team has lost a weekend series, but, you know, Notre Dame, I mean, it's kind of what makes Arkansas so good is the overall offensive approach. They have stars there, but really I think the sum is better than the parts, and I think the same goes for Notre Dame. I mean, you have, you know, your Nico Cavadas, your Jared Miller, some of these guys that have nice track records and are, you know, star players, but really it's just the overall team offense that's just so difficult to navigate that lineup 1 through 9. And you know, like Arkansas a little bit, they've kind of pieced it together on the mound. You keep wondering if, you know, if at some point it's going to catch up with them, and they just keep finding ways to win every single series. And it's incredible the job that coaching staff has done and the job those players have done, certainly buying in. And they have good players, don't get me wrong, but I've been surprised, you know, that their pitching has held up, because it feels a little light to me. And Florida State, on the other hand, They have pitching now. This is probably a fascinating matchup to me, because Florida State is they lead the ACC in ERA. I think they're top 10 in the country in ERA. One of the few teams in the league that has three guys that, you know, workhorse starters they can roll out there and get you deep into a game. That's a rare commodity, really, in college baseball as a whole, but especially in the ACC this year. I mean, maybe Virginia has it, Florida State, and that's really about it. And so, you know, Parker Messick and Bryce Hubbard, these kind of emerging second-year talents, and then the veteran Grady on Sunday, that's pretty good for Florida State. And you mentioned Matthew Nelson having a huge year. Should have been on the midseason watch list, because I think he's one of the leading contenders for the Golden Spikes Award right now. It's kind of crazy the year that he's done, you know, the year that he's had as a catcher, the most demanding defensive position, and he's really good defensively too.
When you spotlight the SEC now, the Southeastern Conference, the conversation starts with Arkansas because they're at the very top, but 1A and 1B then would be Vanderbilt. I'm looking for a non-Arkansas storyline, though, that jumps off the page for you, and I have a feeling you're likely going to go to Vanderbilt, but there's a lot of interesting facets here in the final month of the regular season. You got Tim Elko back in a pinch hitting role for Ole Miss. You wonder about Florida and what kind of damage they can do in a regional after taking 2 out of 3 from Vanderbilt. You knew it was only a matter of time before Kevin O'Sullivan had the Gators ready to roll. And hey, did they break Jack Leiter? I know Leiter hasn't been the same here over the last couple of weeks, but, you know, how will Leiter bounce back and Kamar and Jack together, that 1-2 punch? What are you most intrigued by here for the final few weeks of the regular season of the SEC that is non-Arkansas related?
Yeah, so many storylines in that league, and you hit on one of them. You know, how will Jack Leiter bounce back? Let's not forget, as good as this guy has been in his short career, this is his first go-round through the SEC, because last year the season was canceled before he could make a single conference start. And so this is a grind, unlike anything he's experienced before. And last 2 weeks, he's kind of, you know, hit some speed bumps, and he's an elite talent, and I'm sure he'll probably bounce back. And I certainly wouldn't want to face Rocker and Leiter in a series in the postseason. But right now, you know, we're kind of seeing Rocker still cruising along. He's the veteran guy. He's been through the rigors before. He's been through the month of June before. He's been the College World Series most outstanding player. Maybe he's separating himself now as the favorite for that, you know, Golden Spikes Award again. Over for a while, it looked like Leiter was almost like going to cruise to that award. But the question is for Vanderbilt, can they find a third starter? And do they need to find a third starter? Because it's been a revolving door for them, really, and they've kind of pieced it together with the bullpen and kind of ridden the offense of some wins in the third games of series. But eventually, it has always felt like maybe that could bite them at some point. So we'll see if they can make a deep run, you know, if that deficiency remains. And, you know, Mississippi State, I feel like, for a lot of the season, I liked their full rotation a little bit better. And then Jackson Fristo, the freshman, kind of struggled a little bit. But I still think with Christian McLeod and Will Bednar atop the rotation and the depth of that pitching staff, the elite bullpen that they have, for me, that's the team that almost is lying in the weeds behind Vanderbilt and Arkansas, but a team that I really think could win it all. And then you mentioned Florida. I mean, there's a reason they were preseason number one. They're insanely talented. And they hadn't really had the season that we expected them to have, but then you look up and heck, they're 31-13. I mean, they're, you know, 13-8 in the league. What do you want? I mean, they're actually having a good year. It's just they've kind of done it quietly. And the crazy thing is, I feel like they still haven't really played their best baseball. They still haven't really gotten all the pieces to click. They're still, you know, tinkering with different combinations on the mound, especially. I feel like over the next month, Kevin O'Sullivan's going to figure it out because he always does. And they've already proven they can beat anybody. They just, like you said, won that series from Vandy. They have a series win against a very dangerous Ole Miss team. They're going to be a scary team to face in the month of June.
Final thing to get you out of here on air and a little bit deeper, and it's just something that was a topic a week ago, and that was diversity, markability of the game and how college baseball continues to really face an uphill battle in growing the sport, both nationally, as you see it on ESPN and SEC Network and Pac-12, you know, Network and Texas Longhorn Network. I mean, finding the games is certainly easier nowadays, but how does college baseball continue to maybe, you know, advance itself and market itself and make it more visible here over the next couple of years in your mind?
The game has definitely come a long, long way. You know, in the last 20 years, it's insane. If you think about, you know, the fact that you could almost never find a college baseball game on TV in the regular season, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and now they're all over the place. And, of course, streaming has helped a lot with that. But I still think the next step for the sport is to increase that 11.7 scholarship number, you know, and that's certainly a way that makes, you know, would make the game more attractive to, you know, the really good athletes out there who maybe are picking football and basketball instead of baseball. I think one reason for that is there's just a clear path to a full scholarship. It's that simple. And so, you know, I think if we can find a way to you know, supplement that 11.7, whether Major League Baseball steps in and helps supplement it, or just, you know, maybe the schools that really care about baseball, maybe they just kind of break off and push the discussion. If the SEC says, hey, we want 13 scholarships, we want 15 scholarships, who's with us? I have a feeling at some point, you know, as those leagues get more and more autonomy, that's the direction we could be headed in, because, you know, the SEC, ACC, Big 12, they really care about baseball, and I think their programs would invest more in it if given the opportunity. So that's really the next hurdle we have to clear as a sport.
Good stuff, my man. He's Aaron Fitt on Twitter, at Aaron Fitt. Listen to him, Kendall Rogers, Mike Rooney on their D1 Baseball podcast, wherever you podcast. Also that Nerdcast with Mark Etheridge. Aaron Fitt likely heading to Greenville for Tulane ECU this weekend. Could bounce around like he did last week as well. We'll see. ODU, Charlotte, also Virginia, and Virginia Tech a week ago. He gets around. Aaron Fitt, appreciate you, my guy. Have fun this weekend, all right?
Absolutely. As always, always great talking with you.
He's the expert. That's why I wanted to ask him the question, as Michael Serber rejoins me now. And yes, I have pants on as we rejoin you this portion of the program following the Aaron Fitt interview. 11.7 scholarships. I mean, the man's not wrong. I mean, that is too few a number of scholarships. Not only that, as we spoke about last week, Serbs, and a very spirited debate, not bait, but debate, but a discussion about what baseball could do to help grow the college game and make it more viable, more marketable, more visible. And a lot of that has to do with a third paid full-time assistant as well that can help grow the minority base. And 11.7 scholarships, if you increase the scholarships, there's more room to diversify your rosters right there.
Yeah, there you go, 100%. And it is a there's a ratio here that is off, right? How many people does it take to have a football team? 24. An offense and a defense and two specialists. 24. There are 85 scholarships. Three times as many scholarships, almost four times as many scholarships for football. In baseball, you need nine guys. And that's basically what they got. Or you need 10 guys, you know, if there's a DH situation. You know, you need somebody to come out of the pen at least. You know, you need at least one person available in the pen. So let's just say you need 10 guys. That's how many friggin' scholarships they have. So the ratio is way off.
How many scholarships for a D1 football roster?
85, unless you're under sanctions.
So, and you might have, what, 110, 120? I mean,
it probably varies from school to school, but like the big boys, let's say like a Clemson or a Bama, they probably got 120 kids on the football team.
I mean,
and the 85 scholarships are probably all full scholarships. Let's keep that in mind as well. These 11.7 scholarships they're being split up, partial scholarships. Like your second best player might be paying for half of his school if he doesn't have like some sort of financial aid grant going on.
Right. So in college football, 3/4 of your guys are going to have a scholarship, if not more. Okay, at least 3/4, yeah. Probably closer to 4/5.
What do we got on a college baseball roster? 40, 50 guys?
Yeah, you're going to have anywhere between 40, 45. So, like, let's just say 42 for the sake of it, 43, 44.
Yeah, so 25%.
Yes.
You have 75% of your guys in college football who are under full scholarship. You have 25% of your guys in college baseball who might have a full scholarship, but in all actuality, you probably have more like 35% of your guys with a partial scholarship of some kind. And it goes the same for college basketball, right? Like usually have 8 or 9 scholarships available and you have 12 or 13 guys on the team, you know, including walk-ons. So college baseball is struggling. And, you know, we'd probably be really in for a rude awakening if we started taking a look at some of the women's sports. I'm not privy to what's going on in women's college basketball. My assumption is that they are not.
Well, you know, it's not equal. Look at the weight room that they rolled out initially.
When it comes to facilities and resources.
In San Antonio, viral? And Muffet McGraw, the legendary Hall of Famer, former Notre Dame national championship winning head coach, you know, just went in hard in the paint on that. She's like, look, I don't know why all you are raising your eyebrows and hooting and hollering. Like, this has been a thing forever.
Yeah, that
this has been going on forever.
Yeah, that blew my mind when people were like, oh, this is so shocking. Like, what would be shocking to me is looking at the scholarship numbers and find out what the actual number is. But it was not shocking. Like, it was not shocking because it wasn't a reveal to anyone who follows college athletics in any type of, you know, somewhat reasonable amount. You know, like, and anyone who follows college baseball knows there's an issue when it comes to resources. It's college baseball. It's the women's sports at multiple institutions, and then Olympic sports as well. You know, reaching into the men's sphere. So like, and baseball is not going to get fixed until all of that stuff gets fixed, as we kind of embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion across this country, across all types of organizations and administrations. We're not just going to overnight fix college baseball, and we're not just going to overnight fix women's college basketball.
It'll take
softball.
A village.
It's going to take a lot, and it's going to take a lot of time. And you know, people have been pushing for an extra assistant and more scholarships on college baseball rosters for 15 years. And we haven't seen any movement, right?
No.
So like, it seemed like we were going to get another assistant and then COVID happened. And, with the, you know, so even athletic departments who were probably like good with that are now like, I don't know if we have an extra 40, 50 grand to just shell out, especially when you're trying to get me to shell out another 40, 50 grand for a scholarship for a player. You know, this is not the time to be asking for money, which puts college baseball, softball, women's college basketball, track and field, it puts all, you know, swimming and diving, it puts all of these sports in a tough spot, and we've seen a lot of them eliminated. And, you know, college baseball is not going to be immune to this, and it hasn't been immune to it. I think everyone would like to see more scholarships because it's what's right. I think everyone would like to see better facilities for women's sports because it's what's right. But unfortunately, in this business, the bottom line is what dictates everything. And college football and college basketball are still bringing in what people want. They're hitting the number on the bottom line that wants to be seen, whereas college baseball is not in uniformity hitting that bottom line. Probably in the SEC it is. Maybe some places in the ACC. Maybe even some select places in the Big 12 and Pac-12. But there is not a ton of parity around the country in these leagues.
It's the fair and just thing to do. Speaking of the SEC, and I bring up Muffet McGraw to make a hard pivot. I don't want to distract from three up, three down. We got the viewing lineup to burn through here over the next 10 minutes or so. But did you see Kim Mulkey's new deal at LSU? Mm-mm. Women's head basketball coach. So she was making like 2.3 in Waco at Baylor and left for a change of scenery more than anything. And to go home, she played at Louisiana Tech. And here's your college baseball twist. Her son is Kramer Robinson, former LSU star. I watched him play alongside. Really, he starred after Alex Bregman had already left and was drafted by the Astros. But I think it was the 2015 or 2016, summer of 2016, where Kramer Robertson, her son, starred for LSU. So she has deep LSU ties. She's now the head coach, head women's coach at LSU. Her contract, 8 years, $2.5 million per year. And it's going to get up to $3.3 million by 2029. Let's
turn the page to three up and three down, but just Don Staley in South Carolina and LSU is going to be must-see television within a few years.
Oh, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. Women's college basketball, baby. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's do go. It.
At the top level, man, it cannot be beat. It is a phenomenal offering, and I'm glad that I hope that what we've seen with women's college basketball as far as accessibility on the networks and being able to watch it, which has improved over the last couple of years, comes to college baseball as well and softball.
Three up and three down. Here's your three trending upward. VCU, 12 straight wins. No games, though, against Richmond this weekend. I have no idea what's going on or why, because I believe Richmond's playing Dayton. So if you have an idea, tweet us, at CSNowTweets. Rutgers, 5-1 against Michigan and Nebraska over the next 2 weeks. West Coast Brass also. Here's your third one. It's a package deal, server. San Diego, 8 straight wins. And really, we failed to mention this a week ago, so the E is on us. Gonzaga, 9 of 10 wins, each 14-4 in the league. They were supposed to play each other, Serbs, in Spokane last weekend, but then the Zags got the Rona. So that series never went down. That would have been a massive West Coast Conference showdown.
WCC powerhouses, baby. Yeah, Zags, a strong college basketball season, moving right along to the diamond with Tom Hudson. I would not be distressed if I had an NCAA tournament broadcast to produce for them.
Hoodie, Zags on COVID pause. Toreros host BYU this weekend. Three down, Fairfield. What are you doing, man? Do better. 28-0, all of a sudden you lose.
What are you doing?
To Siena.
Like when? Have you ever heard of it?
No. Entered game three on Sunday of a doubleheader a week ago.
Bums.
At 28-0, lost 6-1. Conclude the regular season at Niagara this weekend.
Would you say they Would you? Oh boy, Fairfield falls at Niagara. Would you say that?
Yes.
Would that be the headline?
Yeah, that would be it. That's pretty witty of you. Thank you. Yeah. Oregon State lost 2 of 3 to UCLA. The Beavers have consecutive losing weekends without a series win. Dropped 2 of 3 to UCLA and UC Irvine the week before that. 2.5 games now to first place, chasing Pac-12 leading Arizona and South Carolina. 8 runs on 16 hits. Only in 3 losses to Ole Miss,
they get
swept by the Rebels. Mm. Ole Miss, who hadn't won a series in a month, knocks off South Carolina. I mean,
go Rebs.
Hosting chances would normally be on life support too, serves, but they might benefit from the early regional thing
there's
that's
no,
coming out.
Yeah, so. There's no telling. There's no telling how that's going to go.
Here's your watchables for the weekend. There's a lot, so get out your pen and paper or your pencil. Again, ECU and Tulane is on here, but we'll give you a slew of others first. Texas and TCU. The Longhorns, man, they dropped a series last weekend to Texas Tech in Austin at home. The Red Raiders had a chance for a sweep late, so Texas falls in the rankings to number 6 in the D1 baseball poll. TCU swept West Virginia last weekend, so Serbs, that sets this up as an opportunity here with the Big 12 regular season crown on the line. TCU just needs to take two from Texas. They need to win two. It's in Fort Worth. If they do so, they'll be the Big 12 regular season champions, or at least clinch a share of it.
Yeah, huge series for both teams, regardless of how it turns out. TCU can clinch. But, you know, Texas definitely needs a bounce back to sort of reclaim their superiority, if you will. But it'll be a good series. It'll be worth, you know, at least keeping track of on Friday, Saturday, see how it goes, and then potentially – I'm calling that there will be a rubber match on Sunday. I don't think anybody's sweeping anybody here.
That's a good call. 8:30, 3 o'clock, and 2 o'clock Eastern time. ESPNU Friday, Saturday, ESPN Plus on Sunday. Horned Frogs 17-3 at home. Ty Madden coming off his worst start of the year for Texas in that Friday game against Texas Tech a week ago. 5 innings, 6 runs, 5 of them are in 3 walks and 7 Ks. It'll be interesting to see how he bounces back. Fourth-rated Mississippi State and number 19 South Carolina. Speaking of the Gamecocks, this one's intriguing out of the SEC because you want to see how the Gamecocks bounce back after getting swept in Oxford. 7, 4, and 2 o'clock SEC Network Plus each of the first 2 days SEC Network on Sunday. Mississippi State swept Texas A&M. USC was swept by Ole Miss, and because of that, Mark Kingston, the head coach, is going to shuffle things up. Might tweak the lineup, but he is certainly going to change up the starting rotation as redshirt junior Thomas Farr, he started every game one this season. He's going to go Sunday in the finale. Senior Brandon Jordan, who has gone every game two, he's going to get the ball on Friday night, and then getting the nod on Saturday in game number two will be the freshman Will Sanders. He's really established himself as the third option behind those two vets. So Kingston rolling the dice, and he's going to mix things up on the mound this weekend with Mississippi State comes to Columbia to take on the Gamecocks at Founders Park. 18th-ranked Florida State and 7th-ranked Notre Dame. Serber, how can you not be romantic about baseball? This is a matchup of two former teammates in Mike Martin Jr., Florida State head coach, and Link Jarrett, Notre Dame head coach. The two played together, played in a College World Series together back in 1994 for the Noles.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That'll probably be a special weekend for those guys. But it's going to be a great series for us to watch. Notre Dame, I mean, I never thought of them as a baseball school, a couple years ago when they joined the ACC. I was like, what the hell? but they're not only holding their own, but excelling at the top of the conference this year. So, and they have the best don't they do the Golden Dome helmets for
yeah,
batting?
They do. It's amazing.
You can't beat that.
Come on, you know I'm a Notre Dame homer. So
I know.
I get real.
Has he got 24 karat gold in the paint?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ooh,
man.
Girl.
7 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and two. Check that. 6 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 1 o'clock Friday through Sunday, all on the ACC Network. Notre Dame ranked number 2 according to Baseball America, 7th according to D1. Irish have won 6 straight after a sweep of UNC. They got a high-powered offense. Still haven't lost a series. 36 runs against Tar Heels. Oh, by the way, speaking of the ACC, Pitt did return to action against West Virginia earlier in the week. Lost 8-2. They were gone for 16 days. They were the ACC Coastal Division leader. Florida State and Notre Dame giving you an Atlantic Division matchup. Again, 2 seasons, Martin Jr. and Jarrett played together, including in 94 when they went to Omaha, the Florida State Seminoles. So 2 former teammates squaring off in South Bend. The Piscataway Pod, some pod action out of the Big Ten. Nebraska and 24th-rated Indiana visit Rutgers. So here's how things shook out, Serber, in the Big Ten a week ago. IU took sole possession of first place after their home series against Iowa. They dropped the first game, won the next two against the Hawkeyes. They will take on Rutgers 2 o'clock Friday, 11 a.m. Saturday. Indiana against Nebraska, 3 o'clock Saturday, 11 a.m. Sunday. And then Rutgers against Nebraska, 3 p.m. Sunday and 11 a.m. Monday. The reason why Indiana was able to slide into first place, not just because they took 2 out of 3 from Iowa, but because they've gone 5-1 against Michigan and Nebraska the last 2 weeks, a sweep of the Cornhuskers most recently. They're only 3.5 games out of first. That's sixth place. But the Big Ten race, man, is shaping up. You heard Aaron Fitz say it's unlikely a Big Ten team is going to host anyways. We rarely get that to begin with. But the Big Ten is shaping up to be fun.
Yeah, it'll be wild to see if someone pops into Omaha from that conference. It's not one that we ever pay attention to come college baseball season. We focus so much on the Southeast, specifically in the ACC and SEC being the teams to watch, and then some of the guys out West. So it's always interesting. I think the Big Ten race is always interesting just in, like, it always feels like they don't really belong until they show up and knock somebody in the mouth. So, it doesn't seem, based on looking at the rankings, that they'll have anyone host. But once again, the system is so odd. I don't think we can make any predictions on who's hosting a regional.
All those games in the Piscataway Pod this weekend on the Big Ten Network. Plus, 9th-ranked Arizona, 16th-ranked Stanford. This year's series out of the Pac-12 for the weekend, 905, 505, and 405, all via the Stanford live stream feed. Wildcats, 10 straight wins for U of A. Cardinal, 15-3 at Sunken Diamond. One tight series against USC off their pause a week ago. Both safely in as hosts? I think so. Arizona, top 8 national seed. Maybe their chance to claim that mark could take a hit if they were to lose this particular series. So some fun out West. More fun out West. UC Irvine, UC Santa Barbara. Barbara, Aaron Fitt and I talked about each of their chances for maybe hosting. I mean, this series is going to go a long way in determining that. 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, doubleheader start on Saturday, 4 o'clock Eastern on BigWest.tv. For the Anteaters and the Gauchos, who are 20-8, took 3-4 against Cal Poly a week ago. UC Irvine, 18-8, split with Long Beach State. Lead by a percentage point of, by my math, 0.036. That's how tight this conference race is. Two games in the win column for the Gauchos, but slightly behind the Anteaters overall. And hey, man, depending on who wins this one, Serbo, we might have to do like an oral history or reveal the better mascot in all of college baseball, Gauchos or Anteaters. That's what's on the line this weekend.
Anteaters.
Yeah. I think you're right.
It's got to be that.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Last one, Tulane, 13th-ranked ECU. Again, push back to start on Friday to 1:32 Eastern. This pod will hit your feed around then or so. ESPN Plus, all these games can be seen 1:30 Eastern start for that doubleheader. 4 o'clock on Saturday, 12:30 on Sunday. AAC playing four-game series. Wave of 1-12 straight. That was before dropping the third game against Houston. That's 13-14. That they ride their streak currently into Greenville. ECU split again with Wichita State following a split with UCF the week prior. Returning home with a bitter taste in their mouth after the split with the Shockers. Eager to end their funk. No respect for the Wave, by the way. We'll see maybe if they can get ranked, if they're able to scoop up a series win at 13th-ranked ECU this weekend. Honorable mention maybe for you, Serbs. Caden Grice, by the way, killed it against Louisville. He had a 3-homer game in game 1 of Clemson's win over Louisville a week ago. The Tigers are going down to the flats to take on Georgia Tech. I know you'll be locked into that one this weekend.
I haven't acknowledged Clemson Tiger baseball over the past few weeks. We've seen an improvement. I will continue to not give them any notoriety.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's for sure. I mean, if it takes you not paying attention for them to start to turn it around, I think they're a lock for a regional at this point. I think they're in the tournament, unless they lose every game from here on out.
Yeah, which is wild.
You wouldn't have thought
that
2 weeks
ago. Yeah, a couple
weeks ago,
I was like, this is a bad year for Monty. But yeah. Okay, we'll see.
Hat tip on the way out to Jordan Patty. 7-inning perfect game for Central Michigan. Program's first such game. 11 strikeouts and 11-0 trouncing of Miami. Ended by the mercy rule. 38 2/3 scoreless inning streak. Now, the Chip's record is 40, so he's just an inning and a third off of matching that. Last done in 1974. One game lead over Ball State in the MAC. Let's give the MAC 1A some love. Big time showdown this weekend to play a series with no MAC tournament. This could be what decides the Mid-American Conference champion this year in college baseball. Patty likely to go in game 1. All right, Serbs, you said you're going on a date tonight. You're going to the Dash game, right? Winston-Salem Dash?
Yep, Dash and Braves. I'm going to wear my Braves gear, though, and root for the road team.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
You enjoy yourself.
Yeah, it should be fun.
I took in Thirsty Thursday on Thursday night, Greensboro Grasshoppers, the Pirates affiliate, the Dash out of Winston-Salem, or the White Sox High A affiliate. And I went to the game last night excited. They were going against the Hickory Crawdads. Brought my daughter. Thirsty Thursday. Drink responsibly, especially with a 5-year-old. Drink early and cut yourself off by the third or fourth inning. That's how I roll.
Solid.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick Gonzalez, 7th overall selection by the Pittsburgh Pirates in this past year's draft. Dude was the 2019 batting champ in all of college baseball. The batting champ with a .432 average playing for New Mexico. Went 7th overall to the Pirates after the COVID-shortened season. And he did not play. He did not play. I don't understand. Like, it was a great game. Exciting game. 2-run walk-off homer for the Grasshoppers to win it. They shut off fireworks. Long game, too. Man, it was like close to 4 hours.
Oh, I mean, God.
Yeah, 6:30 start time. The game didn't end until about 10:15.
Give us a pitch clock. Yeah.
It's brutal. It's brutal. But Nick Gonzalez, first in home runs a year ago with 12 runs, 28 RBIs, 36 total bases, 67. Didn't play for the Grasshoppers last night. Disappointing for sure. Cape Cod MVP in 2019. So maybe I'll get a chance at him next year. Hopefully you'll see some good blossoming talent tonight in Winston-Salem Serbs when you go to the Dash game. It's been fun. It's good to see your face. I love you in the flesh. You're a beautiful man. Let's go raise a glass and toast our life at Learfield IMG College. What do you say?
Cheers.
Cheers, my friend. He's Michael Serber on Twitter at @L_Serberino. I'm Kyle Schassberger at Kyle Schass. Enjoy week 12 in college baseball. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.